It's the Painless Living Show with host and pain treatment expert, Dr. Cassaro, and co-host, Dennis Bergmeier. If you or someone you love suffers from chronic pain, get answers here. Call now, 888-440-4442. That's 888-440-4442. Or visit us online, painlesslivingradio.com.
And good morning.
Good morning to you, too.
Together with Dr. Michael Cassaro, I am John Ashton, and this is the Painless Living Show.
Yes, I'm your host, Dr. Michael Cassaro, and we will be here for the next hour to take your calls about whatever type chronic pain you might be suffering with. There's no copayment, no waiting room, no insurance card required.
Isn't that convenient?
Yes.
No forms to fill out.
That's right.
No hassles. A simple phone number, 888-440-4442, gets you in, and you can talk about any type of chronic pain or any pain you may be suffering at the moment. It doesn't have to be the topic that we will be discussing today. It can be anything.
And what is that topic we will be discussing today?
It is RSD, CRPS 1 and 2.
You don't have to spell it for me.
Kazalgia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have no idea what that is. So a quick explanation, doctor, please.
Okay, there's a lot of terms for it, but it's basically one thing. They just get a new PhD student or whatever needs a thesis, and so comes up with a new name for it. Reflex sympathetic dystrophy is probably the most commonly used term, abbreviated RSD.
Okay.
The newer term would be complex regional pain syndrome, or CRPS. And there's a type 1 and type 2 for anybody that's not happy with just a four-letter abbreviation. And the old name would be Causalgia.
Okay.
And that one, I guess that went by C.
Yeah. It's a pain in the back, hands, foot, arms, or legs, chronic pain in nerves or joints. Is that...
Yeah, I guess just to give a brief description of what it is, it's a nerve injury.
Okay.
It's a nerve injury that causes pain way out of proportion to what the injury seems like it should have caused. In fact, almost always, it's a minor injury that results in this really horrendous pain syndrome.
All right.
It's probably been around for eons, but the first time it was described in print in a professional publication was associated with battle injuries during the Civil War.
Okay.
And there have been papers written ever since, and it continues to confound people here in the 21st century as far as how to properly diagnose and treat RSD in order to minimize the suffering of the people that are afflicted with it.
You know, one of the things you can do here to contact the doctor, whether you want to call 888-440-4442 while we're on the air and have a conversation, or if you'd prefer, you can always contact Dr. Cassaro via email at painlesslivingshow.com. And the doctor will, of course, respond personally to your email. And we pick one every week to basically use as the everyman question about the topic of the week, and we have one right now, and I'll get right into it here if you don't mind. Spinal stimulators work for RSD.
That's
with
what he said.
Exclamation point. I suffered with RSD for 10 years before I had my spinal stimulator implanted. The stimulator allowed me to resume my career. I was able to travel, watch my children play sports in high school and college, and unfortunately, I missed most of their youth because of inadequately treated RSD. My stimulator battery has been failing for a few months. I'm currently recharging it daily. My insurance company is refusing to approve a battery change operation because their statistics tell them that stimulators don't work after 10 years. Duh, maybe because the batteries go bad. I like this guy's attitude. What can I do?
Okay, this is, first of all, there's a very strong statement in there, but then a good question. I'll comment first. I like the way he endorses the treatment of RSD using spinal stimulation. And for people that have had a spinal stimulator for RSD, I think almost invariably they feel exactly this way. In this man's instance, I guess it was important for him to travel to see his children play in organized sports. And the fact that he was able to do that really made him appreciate this. But now he's tied to the recharger almost daily to keep the thing running. The big problem here from an insurance standpoint, and I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing that this is a workman's compensation situation. There's two reasons why I think that. One is it took 10 years to get adequate treatment. That's somewhat typical.
A telltale sign. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other is that some statistician somewhere is telling him that, it doesn't work after this long anyway, so you don't need that battery anymore.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, somebody probably 1,000 miles away, maybe even in another country. And he's supposed to accept that that statistic applies to him as an individual.
Right.
Most of the time, these rechargeable batteries last for around 10 years. Now, I don't know how long his has been in, but when they were first introduced, life might have been a little bit shorter. So if he got one implanted around 2005, the battery would be failing about now. And this is typical. It works just like your cell phone battery. It gets to the point where it won't hold the charge real well anymore.
Right.
And then you just need a new battery.
Yeah.
It's that easy. Unfortunately, the insurance company, they're not feeling his pain.
Literally.
Yes. I don't know that I have a solution that involves the insurance company, especially if this is a workers' compensation insurance company. He has very limited options, and they all probably involve a lawyer.
Nah, that's not good news.
But if he doesn't want to care about the insurance company, there's another way around this, and that's to just go outside the insurance system and pay for it himself. Now, it's not cheap. It's not free. Certainly not.
Yeah.
But the biggest cost is the cost of the battery itself.
Okay.
And a lot of times, if the doctor and the facility both know that you're paying out of pocket and they negotiate a cash price for you, the facility or the device company will do the same thing.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of times all they require to get you a very affordable price is to have everybody sign in writing that everybody else is also giving a cash price.
Gotcha.
And then they'll do it too. They just don't want to be stuck out there with the person that has the least contact with the individual and find out that they're the only ones that gave a big discount.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... makes you feel taken a little bit. But you know, as an aside, I think that's a technique that a lot of us don't realize is possible, that you can pay out of pocket. And if you alert everybody that you are paying out of pocket, the medical profession will work with you.
Yeah, the whole key is to talk about it ahead of time instead of waiting until you get a post-insurance bill and then want to negotiate. There's not as much room for negotiation. And there's a lot of reasons for that. The number one reason is the laws that govern insurance, especially if there's any government payer involved, Medicare, Medicaid, anything like that.
Yeah.
But if your providers, whether they be the physicians, the facilities, or the device companies, if they never have to file the insurance claim, then they don't have to worry about what those rules might be applying to how they discount your fee. They can negotiate a straight up fee. And a lot of times you'll find out that it's very affordable.
Put it back the way it used to be. And I have another aside question, but I'm sure that there are many listeners who have the same picture in their head I have. The device is surgically implanted. The battery is surgically implanted.
That's correct.
Do you have like a cord sticking out of your back or what? I mean, how do you recharge this?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I guess I should have addressed that. Yeah, you just get a spool that fits in a backpack, and then there's an extension cord, and depending on how much mobility you need, you just have to have a stronger back.
Oh, okay.
It's that simple.
All right, now the right answer, please.
There is nothing coming out through your skin.
Okay.
It recharges with a magnet that goes through the skin.
Okay.
So you have, except for the time when you're having the magnet over the top of it to recharge it, you're completely free of any kind of attachment.
Okay.
In fact, what a lot of people do, men more so than women, is they turn it on before they go to work in the morning, and then they don't even bring their controller with them. They just leave it on all day. And when they get home, if they're changing their activities or would want to turn it off, then they can.
Gotcha.
And it turns off, on and off in various programs with a device that works very similar to the remote control for your television set.
All right.
So even to turn it on and off, there's nothing you have to plug in or anything.
Very convenient. Very convenient. Now, is it possible that, RSD and we'll just call it RSD because, as you mentioned earlier, there are a lot of other names, but we're just going to go with the RSD.
I've heard worse words. Yeah. You don't have to spell everything. But.
All right. Is it possible that, you know, as you say, it's pain that's much more severe than the injury that caused it would lead you to believe it should be? Is it even possible to suffer an injury that was so minor that you forget about it, or does it have to be some sort of a traumatic injury to begin with?
Well, yeah, it could be an injury that you might otherwise forget about, but usually the pain starts pretty quickly afterwards.
Okay.
A long time would be pain starting the next day. Okay. So chances are you're not going to forget about it because the pain isn't going to let you.
Gotcha. Okay.
But what happens to a lot of people is they'll have this minor injury, like they strain. Well, let's just say a typical thing that I see very frequently is somebody walking down the steps. They step wrong off of a step. They twist their ankle.
Right.
Okay, at first it just seems like a twisted ankle, and they're wanting to walk it off and maybe put a little ice on it or something. The next day, the pain is way out of proportion. It's skyrocketed. They might try to immobilize it. The next day, it's even worse. So then they go to the emergency room or the doctor, and they say, oh, well, you've got a sprained ankle. They put it in an air cast or something like that.
Right.
And give them maybe some anti-inflammatories, and that doesn't work. So then they go back again, and the doctor starts to think, you know, is this guy trying to just get pain medicine from me?
Yeah.
It was just a twisted ankle.
Yeah.
And by the time it gets to the point where people have taken this seriously enough to see about real diagnosis and treatment, it might be 2 or 3 months down the line by the time they get to the specialist that makes the diagnosis. And by then, the condition may already be permanent. So that's a serious consequence that comes from a delay that's completely understandable and foreseeable. And that's what I was alluding to when at the beginning of the program I mentioned that this still confounds people to this day.
Right.
Almost two centuries after the professional literature described this condition, and people still don't know a proper approach to minimize the suffering of the people that end up being afflicted by it.
So that kind of leads to some frustration.
A lot of frustration. And in the long run, treatment that is effective ends up being much more expensive because just
delayed.
Like any delayed treatment, the longer you delay it, the more expensive it gets. So this spinal stimulator that our email writer wrote about, that wasn't cheap.
Yeah. RSD is the topic we're dealing with on today's show. 888-440-4442. If you have any questions about that or any questions about your pain in general, please feel free to give us a call. 888-440-4442. Painless Living Show. We'll be back.
We'll be right back. To learn more about the topics or products mentioned on the program, visit our website, painlessliving.com.
And to get in touch, 888-440-4442, Painless Living Show. RSD, the topic that we are dealing with, but any topic that you need to deal with today, feel free to give us a call.
So yes, or you can go to the website at painlessliving.com, use the contact form, and I will answer your question. Please be as detailed as possible because I really can't go back and forth a lot.
Right.
But leave your question. You will get an answer. It may not be right away. Don't sit by your computer waiting for the response. But you will get an answer. And every once in a while, we'll pick one. Well, almost every week, we pick one.
Put it on the air.
To feature on the show.
I was saying here, I was looking in some of the triggers of RSD, which basically is pain that's more severe than the injury that caused it would lead you to believe it should be.
That's the hallmark, yes.
Okay. All right. Fractures and sprains and strains, even burns, cuts, or bruises.
That's right.
Soft tissue injuries. Being in a cast, now is there a ratio of the length of time that the limb was immobilized to the chances of developing pain afterwards, or is it that not a...
Yeah, I don't know that it's so much related to the length of time. It's probably more related to whether the cast was properly fit.
Ah, okay.
And there's always the question in my mind, although you'll see this frequently on lists, you know, there's the question in my mind, was it really the cast or was it the injury that required the use of a cast? And it just wasn't recognized. And then after the cast is on, they start thinking, oh, maybe it's too tight or maybe the cast is poor, and they take the old cast off, put a new one on, because we see that happening a lot in people that end up being diagnosed with RSD.
All right.
But I'm not so sure that it's actually the cast.
Okay. So then you don't know. Okay. It also says here that surgical or medical procedures such as needle sticks, which we go back to last week, and the woman's email we read, she had a continuing pain from a shot she had when she was giving birth.
That's right. Well, that was an epidural injection. That's a little bit more involved. But yes, you could end up with a condition very similar to RSD if there's a complication from that. Needle sticks, I don't see it too often, but I did once many years ago now. This is probably 8 or 10 years ago, maybe a little longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to think how many years I've been in practice. I saw somebody that got RSD from a bee sting.
Ooh.
Yes.
Well, I guess
so. There are
RSD from a bee sting is probably better than some of the other things you can get from a bee sting, which
I suspect that stinger must have gotten right into a nerve and injected the venom into the nerve or right around it somehow, that it caused an overreaction of the nervous system.
Our email listener mentioned the spinal stimulator. Are there other ways of doing it? Because for some people, having something implanted is like a step that they really, it's a little harsh. They don't want to go that far.
That's true. If someone tells me they don't want an implanted device, that's fine. I don't try to talk them into it. But there are other alternatives. It's just that what we're usually looking for treatment for a condition that's likely to be a lifelong condition is a treatment that's likely to be a lifelong treatment.
Makes sense.
That's where the spinal stimulator matches up real well. But there are things that could be done, especially early on.
Okay.
If the RSD is recognized right away within the first few weeks, a series of nerve blocks a lot of times can just get it to calm down and go away. And then it doesn't become permanent. And depending upon where you have the nerve injury, different type nerve blocks might be indicated. And, you know, the list and the possibilities are really too long to get into the specifics unless we have a caller with a specific question. I can give a specific answer.
Okay, I got you.
but nerve blocks frequently help. Another thing that frequently helps and is often overlooked is to look at what else is going on in the person's body that might be promoting nerve irritability or inflammation, things about their underlying health that may make the condition worse or make it harder for them to recover on their own, right, spontaneously. And a lot of times we don't even think about that. But that's where, especially if it's already become permanent, that's where the most money or the most bang for your buck is.
Gotcha.
As far as getting long-term relief without an implanted device.
Okay.
And that's usually comes along the things that we talk about frequently on this show, mm-hmm, which is eat right, sleep right, and exercise. But there are medications that can help decrease the nerve irritability. And there are also devices that can help, depending upon where the RSD is, things that help to immobilize or to provide support,
okay,
especially during particular activities.
I know one of the things here you have is a TENS unit. And is the TENS unit basically the same as a stimulator, just it's outside instead of inside?
Well, that's a legitimate question, I guess. Mm-hmm. The TENS unit is transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulator. That's where TENS comes from, T-E-N-S. Right. Both the TENS unit and the spinal stimulator are electrical stimulators.
Right.
But that's where the similarity ends.
Okay.
It's kind of like a bicycle and a Mercedes are both transportation vehicles.
I gotcha.
But that's really where the similarity ends.
Okay, so the answer then is no.
Yeah, it's different. It works different. It's not okay. Just that there is a different class of stimulator. What it stimulates is different, and how it is that it relieves pain is different. But a TENS unit can really work well, especially if there's a lot of spasm associated with the RSD.
Okay.
If the pain causes reflex muscle spasms, the TENS unit can really get a lot of relief.
Oh, okay.
Now, the problem with that is it's going to be best used intermittently, which means no more than probably a couple hours at a time,
mm-hmm,
and then you got to be without it for a while for it to work again for a few hours.
Right. And I've got to ask you, what is astragalus root? I have never in my life come across this.
Astragalus.
See?
Well, that's a nutritional supplement, and there are a lot of other nutritional supplements that act to decrease that nerve irritability.
All right.
And the ones that decrease irritability also sometimes improve intracellular detoxification, removing the metabolic byproducts from the cell easier, and that decreases the irritability of the nerve. So there's multiple ways to do that.
You know, I think the fact that you know, a lot of people are hesitant to communicate what they think is going on with their bodies when they're intimidated by physicians. I got to tell you, physicians intimidate people because they're very smart and they know everything. So what advice would you give to a listener in North Carolina or Louisiana or Hawaii or any of those far-flung places where they're listening to us right now who thinks they may have an RSD problem, to walk into their doctor and say, I just heard a very smart guy on the radio explain exactly what's going on. Could you see if this is RSD?
Was that you or me?
That's you.
Oh, okay.
I'm just reading along, buddy.
All right. That's always the hardest part about RSD is people that have it, but it has not yet been diagnosed.
Right.
And I don't know that there's a good answer because communication is personal. And it requires two people being personal in order to have an effective communication. And I guess the description that I hear most often is that they say the doctor just doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, I don't know what to tell you except maybe get another opinion from another doctor.
Try another doctor.
Yeah. Now, I do have some hints. Okay. One of the hints is, even if you're in fairly good health, have a doctor. Even if you only go once every 3 or 4 years, have a doctor
okay.
that at least has seen you before, knows what you were like when you didn't have this condition.
Okay.
So that when some condition comes up in the future, like an injury with pain way out of proportion, mm-hmm. and you go, he's got some previous experience upon which to base his judgment and say, ooh, there really has been a change here. This is something right. significant. Instead of assuming that you're one of the people that might be labeled a hypochondriac.
Yeah, or okay? a wimp.
Or a wimp, right. Yeah. Now, this is one of those things that closing the barn door after the horse is out is not very effective.
Right.
On the other hand, if you're healthy, especially if you believe you're going to be healthy forever and never going to need a doctor, so you're going to avoid going to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have a problem with people that believe that way, but they run a risk.
Right.
And that risk is that then when something seriously does happen, you have to be really convincing and able to communicate very effectively early on so that you don't end up getting bad labels. And by bad labels, I'm not talking about malicious. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a label that's incorrect.
Yeah.
Because most of the time when the treatment doesn't work, it's because the diagnosis was either incomplete or incorrect.
Right.
And that's the label that I'm talking about.
Whoa. 888-440-4442 is the phone number here at the Painless Living Show. RSD, the topic, but we will discuss any pain that you may be suffering from right now with the doctor. If you just give us a call, 888-440-4442.
We're at the midway point of the show right now, so this is a good time to call. Get your call in the queue.
It's the Painless Living Show. To be part of the program, call now. 1-888-440-4442.
And there is room at 888-440-4442 for your call. RSD, what's the R stand for?
Reflex.
Reflex, that's in its sympathetic.
Sympathetic are the nerves that are injured, the sympathetic nerves. Those right. are ones that control things like sweating.
Okay.
The hair follicles on your skin, the mm-hmm. blood vessels. So those are the sympathetic nerves. They're the ones that are injured.
Stupid question.
And then dystrophy comes from people that have the condition tend right. to not use the affected limb. So it starts to gotcha. Wither.
Gotcha.
And that's why they call it RSD.
I have stupid may be too strong a word. Just promise you won't laugh at me.
No, I can't promise that. Go ahead.
One of the things listed in the natural treatments section here of, during the research is cayenne pepper. Now, do you take that internally or externally?
Or both.
Okay.
Yes. It tends, if you have the RSD in a fairly limited region, like let's say it's your hand,
mm-hmm.
you can use pepper cream that is available over the counter in grocery stores, drug stores, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Capsaicin is the active ingredient. It comes from hot peppers.
Okay.
Cayenne peppers included.
Mm-hmm.
And you can rub that on your hand. And what that'll do is soak through your skin and help to desensitize those nerve endings that are firing off those inappropriate pain signals.
Same way it kills your taste buds when you eat too much of it.
Or enhances your taste buds. Yeah, it's a similar process.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is when you take it internally, it helps to dilate your blood vessels. It improves blood flow. And so many people with RSD, one of the big problems is that the affected limb is always cold.
Yeah.
It'll even a lot of times have a blue color to it.
Ooh.
But it's cold and it hurts from the cold as much as it does from the nerve injury. So taking the cayenne pepper can help to warm up that extremity by improving blood flow.
Are there any, pre-existing conditions in people that would exacerbate the effects of the RSD? And I don't know, asthma or allergies or anything like that?
Well, the easy answer to that question is yes.
Okay.
But it's almost any condition. Now, things that tend to come across more commonly is people that have had previous nerve injuries, mm-hmm. even if they didn't realize it. Like, let's suppose they've got a herniated disc in their low back, mm-hmm. and it's causing irritation of their sciatic nerve, and they might have low-grade problems with sciatica that are intermittent. Maybe once every year or two, they have a little bout that comes and goes in a few weeks and might not require any treatment. And then they get an injury on that same leg. Mm-hmm. They probably have an increased risk of developing RSD
okay.
because of that previous nerve injury. And then there are people with metabolic problems that increase nerve irritability. Things like diabetes. People with diabetes have an increased risk. Thyroid disease, okay. same thing. People with thyroid disease, and it doesn't seem to matter too much if the thyroid disease is from an overactive thyroid gland or an underactive thyroid gland. Either one can predispose to more pain
right.
than what you would ordinarily get and more trouble with healing. And then there are direct problems with the immune system. The immune system does your healing. Mm-hmm. And if you already have immune system problems, mm-hmm. then chances are a little bit greater that you're going to have an immune system problem after an injury that can result in poor healing and worse outcome.
It's so confusing for those of us who suffer from any of these ailments that contribute to chronic pain as to where to go. Is this type of thing that a chiropractor could address, or what specific, I guess, segment of the medical profession is best equipped to handle this type of problem?
That's a tough question to answer because I don't think there is any segment of the medical profession that is optimally
okay.
Equipped to handle the problem, which is part of the problem. But your specific question about a chiropractor, I think that most chiropractors could probably help in the early phase, right after the injury, especially if the injury that precipitates it involves something that they can directly assess and treat. Like if it's a back or neck injury, they may be able to get it to relieve itself within days, and that's its best opportunity to go away and never become a long-term problem. The other thing I'll say about most chiropractors is they'll be the first, they will recognize very easily that if it is developing into a escalating problem, becoming mm-hmm. chronic, they'll probably recognize that they're dealing with something that's out of their expertise.
They're ill-equipped
and refer
to
you
handle.
On
yeah.
more quickly than your family practice doctor probably will.
Okay.
Who might try just another prescription for another pain medicine and another prescription for another antidepressant or something like that and run out of his prescriptions before mm-hmm. he refers you to somebody else. And I don't mean that as an indictment of the family practice doctor. It's just that he's doing what he's trained to do, and you're the one that's not responding to treatment.
Right.
So it really is a very, probably the most common thing that I see. You know, I'm usually way down the line. People that come into my office have usually seen three or four doctors at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
and they're all very frustrated when they get here, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
The doctors and the patients are frustrated.
Right.
They've all thought that they had the answer, mm-hmm. and they tried treatment that was supposed to work for what they thought the answer was,
right.
and it didn't work.
Right.
And that's when they refer to somebody else. And then eventually somebody says, you know what? I think those other treatments didn't work because this is actually RSD. Mm-hmm. And now we know where to send you. So that I think in 30 years that I've been practicing, I've seen less than a handful of people in the acute phase of their reflex sympathetic dystrophy where the injury was within 1 or 2 months.
Mm, okay.
Most of the people I see are a year or more,
yeah.
from their injury.
Yeah.
Sometimes I see people like our email mm-hmm. listener that are 10 years out from their injury.
Wow.
So it can be sometimes a very arduous, frustrating process.
Is RSD something that can be, quote unquote, cured? Or is it just something where the pain can be maintained to a, you know, an acceptable level for the patient? Or
I'm not sure. I think it can be cured in the early phase. The cutoff, the rule of thumb cutoff is about 12 weeks.
All right.
If you can get good treatment within 12 weeks, frequently it'll disappear, become asymptomatic. Now, whether that's cured or just in remission, I don't know, because fortunately, this is an uncommon enough condition that we don't have large population studies to tell us whether these people are at greater risk for recurring with another injury or not. But even people that have had it for years, it can go into remission. Now, into remission doesn't mean that it's not there. It might mean that, you know, anytime that they're not meticulous about what they're doing and how their body mechanics work, they can flare it up again. But on a day-to-day basis, doing routine stuff in a meticulous manner, they can keep those symptoms from interfering with their daily life.
Do outside stimuli, like, you know, cold weather or humidity or rain or anything like that, does that kind of stuff come into play with this particular malady?
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
Certainly. Everybody with RSD is going to get worse this time of year. And from now till May, they're going to be suffering more than they do in the warm months.
Well, that's something to look forward to. You alluded a little earlier to, just a few moments ago, actually, where you were talking about physicians prescribing more and more things, including antidepressants. There seems to be a lot of, like, last-ditch effort if the treatments are not working, where a lot of people, not only your medical professionals, but your friends and your family and your relatives will basically just look at you and shake their heads and say, man, this is all in your head. You know, you're depressed, you're stressed, you need to just relax and it'll all be better. How do you deal with that?
Well, that's tough to deal with from the standpoint that there's a strong professional contingent that believe that RSD is a psychiatric condition.
Really?
Okay. In fact, it's included in the Manual of Psychiatric Diagnoses.
Oh, no.
So a lot of times it might depend on who gets hold of you first. You know, if you see a psychiatrist first, well, you're going to be treated as if you're crazy.
Okay.
Because it's in the manual. It's a real diagnosis.
That's what it says in the book, yeah.
Yeah, on the other hand, if you get seen by an orthopedic surgeon first, he's going to recognize that, no, this is physical.
Right.
Because there's very little room for psychiatry in most orthopedic practice.
Yeah.
So he's going to recognize it as physical and either treat it himself or refer you to somebody else who's going to treat it as physical. And there are a lot of other gradations in between. And a lot of what I was talking about earlier about the frustration that comes early on with wondering if this person's a drug seeker, is he a hypochondriac, those are the psychological and psychiatric overtones of people that can't really make a judgment one way or the other about you as a patient.
Which goes back to why you should have a physician that is at least somewhat familiar with your history.
That established relationship, even if it's a distant one, is good to have.
888-440-4442. One more segment of the show left today. Still time for you to get in and talk directly to Dr. Cassaro. Give us a call. We will be right back.
It's like an office visit without the copay. The Painless Living Show.
And the magazines are more up to date in the waiting room than they would be at your local physician's office. 888-440-4442. That is the phone number, toll free to get into the Painless Living Show between now and the top of the hour when we go away for another week.
We are in the last segment now. So this is the time to ask your question, or you can hold it for another week.
That's it. Speak now or forever hold your peace, as
well,
I have heard.
Not forever, just for a week.
For 7 days.
Or I guess you could use the contact form on the website at painlesslivingshow.com. Unfortunately, there's very little opportunity for dialogue that way.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier over the radio. over the telephone.
Yeah, because if you have heard any of the calls we have here, the doctor can very easily draw out information that you may not even know is important to know. Would that be fair?
Well, that's what I try to do, whether it's in my office or on the phone.
Gotcha. So again, it's 888-440-4442. And we kind of cut the conversation short when we were talking about a connection or higher instances of RSD with folks with existing allergies and asthma. And we want to revisit that, I think.
Yeah, I want to revisit that because you asked about those specific things. And when I thought about it, the specific things you're talking about are places where you have increased activity of the immune system. The immune system is overreactive. Mm-hmm. That's what causes allergies to things that are not harmful.
Yeah.
And asthma, where you get your airways closing off with whether it's exertion or allergies or something else. And these are the type things that do make it more likely that you'll have an overreaction from an injury, even a minor injury. And the minor injuries we're talking about, we mentioned things like fractures, but you also mentioned bruises.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of these things are put in a category of crush injuries, which are basically things like slamming your finger in a door, dropping a bowling ball on your foot, things like that, where you get a bruise. It's the only visible injury, even if it might not even be visible.
Right.
And you end up with this horrendous pain syndrome because of it. And things like allergies and asthma are a clue. Now, it's not a cause and effect thing.
Okay.
You can't say because you have asthma with a lot of environmental allergies, the next time you get a minor injury, you're going to develop a neurologic complication.
Right.
No, it's not that easy.
Right.
It's just that when we look backwards at the people that we make this diagnosis on, we find out that there's a disproportionately large number, percentage-wise, that have these underlying conditions. You would think if it was unrelated, it'd be the same proportion of people with asthma as without asthma with the injury as what there are in the general population. But that's just not the case.
So is this basically the last ditch approach that someone, the frustration level, just say, you know, check it for RSD. What the heck, as long as we're here?
Well, I'm going to say last ditch from the standpoint that you hope that the last diagnosis is the right one.
Right.
You'd really hate it if you got the right diagnosis and then they kept coming up with new diagnoses and kept trying treatments.
Yeah, that does not build confidence. No, not at all.
And just pass up the last one. So I think that in most cases, the last diagnosis is probably the best chance of being the correct one.
Like you always find something in the last place you look, so there you go.
Yeah. Let's hope you're not still looking for that screwdriver. Yeah, we're going to go to the phone lines now. We have a caller. We've got James calling from Clarksville, Indiana. James, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you today?
Yes, sir. This is James Durbin, and I was wanting to question you about I have some pain in each side of my butt lock. You know where you carry your handkerchief on one side and your billfold on the other side?
Sure.
Especially when I'm driving. And, I mean, it's real uncomfortable. And I take hydrocodone 7.5. It doesn't affect that pain at all. And I just wondered, could it be nerves or is it sciatica nerve causing it? Or is there any advice you could give me?
Well, if it's on both sides, I'm going to go way out on a limb here and think that it might be actually coming from your neck, especially if, does it bother you worst when you're driving?
Yes. And sometimes when I'm sitting in a chair at a desk, it bothers me then too. Now I can get up and walk around and it gives me relief. Now my handkerchief, you know, it's a little kind of knotty, but sometimes when I'm driving, I'll reach back and take it out my pocket and it helps a little bit. And I'll take my billfold out and set up on the dash or something. And it seems like it relieved, but it's still there. But it's not there when I'm walking or standing and moving around.
Okay. I think what happens when you're driving a car, you're not sitting up exactly straight. The seat back always goes, is tilted back just a little bit, which means that you have to bend your head forward in order to see the road straight in front of you. And it's that head forward bend that can help a bone spur or something there to push on and irritate the nerve fibers that end up going down to your buttocks. And then when you're sitting at a desk, especially if you're head down writing or reading something like that, that would be the same type of position, holding your head down. When you pick your head up, you stand up, you walk around, your neck straightens up and it gets that pressure off those nerve fibers and it relieves that pain. And I suspect that's what you're dealing with. And that's one of the reasons the hydrocodone doesn't touch it, is because it's nerve pain, and the hydrocodone is not very effective for nerve pain.
Well, that's what I wondered about. Why wouldn't the hydrocodone happen at any? And so it's because of the nerves.
That's right. Now, there's a few things you can do at that desk. What you can do is, in the old days, we used to recommend getting a drafting table, but now you can buy a device to put on top of your desk that sits at a slant so that you're working at an inclined surface instead of a flat surface. And that helps with the tilt on your neck. That can take some of the pressure away from that sustained posture. The other thing is just pick your head up, move it around every few minutes, every time you think of it, really, before you go back down to looking down at the desk. And that can help keep that pressure from building up on those nerve fibers. If you're working at a computer, raise the bottom of the computer monitor up so that the bottom of the monitor is at your eye level. And that'll help with keeping you from looking down for prolonged periods of time at a computer screen.
Even though I'm not having no pain in my neck, it could be related to that.
Yeah, that's right. When you irritate a nerve, you don't always feel it where the nerve is irritated. You feel it where the nerve goes. And I guess an example I could use, even though your nerves function like wires, they actually work more like garden hoses. And if you take a garden hose and kink it, you don't notice so much. You don't notice a leak or a blockage so much there. It's at the end of the garden hose, you notice that the water's not coming out right. And that's what happens with your nerves. When you push on them, push on the nerve fibers in your neck, it's where that nerve goes that you notice that it doesn't work right.
Same as when I'm driving now, should I just move my neck around and kind of, or would it sit on a pillow or anything you suggest there?
Try to have that seat back up as close to straight up and down as you can get. The more erect your body is, the better as far as keeping you from slumping your neck forward. And, of course, that brings to mind the overall posture of your spine. If you have a slumping posture, it's going to be harder.
I'm 73 years old, too.
Okay. Yeah, well, you probably have a pretty good collection of bone spurs there.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and then overall, just stay active. You know, you sound, from your voice, you sound like the kind of guy that probably is active.
Yes,
and that's good.
I'm quite active, and it does give me more relief.
Yeah, just stay active. There are other things you can use also, like an inversion table can help a lot.
Yeah, I've heard of them. In fact, I think maybe I've heard you speak of them.
Okay. Well, I do speak of them frequently because they do work well. I recommend them highly for people that have back problems. So an inversion table may be a good thing to try, but keeping in mind that an inversion table isn't necessarily going to keep you from experiencing that pain from your handkerchief and your billfold. But what it will do is help keep you from getting worse as time goes forward.
Well, I'm hoping it goes forward, but I certainly appreciate your time, Doctor.
Well, I hope it goes forward for you, too, and you're welcome. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's one of the things I think I've noticed, too. You mentioned sitting in a car. In some of the newer cars, the headrests are moved forward of the back of the seat. So even though you are reclining just a little bit, your head is still pushed forward.
Yeah, but that's probably not the right way to get your head supported.
Hey, you know,
that's probably going to lead to more problems. In an impact, it probably gives a good result. But if you're just driving, probably not real good.
Well, what do they know about medical stuff? Yeah. They build cars.
Well, we're at the end of the show now, so...
That is it. We do appreciate you listening. I am co-host John Ashton.
And I'm your host, Dr. Michael Cassaro. We will be back next week and every Saturday from 11 to noon Eastern Time. Please join us.